and welcome to the Innovation Forum podcast for Friday, 22nd of January, with me, Ian Welsh. A few weeks ago, I had a discussion with representatives from Proforest, Sime Darby Plantation and Musa Mas about how the Accountability Framework Initiative is helping the palm oil sector in Southeast Asia develop long-term solutions that really deliver on no deforestation, no peat, no exploitation commitments. It was a fascinating discussion and very much worth a listen. However, that's to come. First is some sustainable business news. Not for the first time, the UK government has been accused of backtracking on previous pledges, with a refusal to accept an amendment to new trade legislation that would have the effect of preventing imports of food and food products into the UK that don't meet existing standards, for which for now mirror those of the EU. This could mean that UK producers have to compete with cheaper imports that fall below rules on chlorinated chicken or hormone-fed beef, for example, which are currently banned in the UK. It may be that retailers uphold these rules. Many UK supermarket chains, including Sainsbury's, Waitrose and Marks & Spencer, have made public commitments to refuse to stock products that don't meet domestic standards. The UK public, across all political spectrums, has consistently indicated a preference for strong food standards. Another rollback of standards in UK agriculture came with the news that sugar beet farmers will be allowed to use neonicotinoid pesticides this year that are linked to killing bee populations. The chemicals were banned by the EU and the UK in 2018. Wildlife charities and others have reacted angrily to the decision, stressing the crucial role played by bees and other pollinators in agricultural production. Consumer goods giant Unilever has pledged that every worker at its 65,000 direct suppliers will earn a living wage by 2030. The company says it will work with its suppliers to achieve this and is prepared that costs may increase. Unilever has also pledged to work with more suppliers owned and operated by women and other currently underrepresented groups. Countries in the Global South will be prioritised by the business. Current company rules require only local minimum wages to be paid and will work with NGOs and suppliers to establish local living wages that allow for a decent standard of living covering basic needs including food, water, housing, clothing and education. The latest Edelman Trust Barometer, the annual snapshot of consumer trust and company credibility, reveals that a majority of respondents in every developed market do not feel that they will be better off in 5 years' time, and that in fact capitalism in its current form is doing more harm than good. Some 83% globally are concerned about losing a job because of such factors as automation, recession, cheaper foreign competition, and the gig economy. Business is the most trusted institution, though, ahead of government or the media, and partisan and populist national governments are, perhaps unsurprisingly, seen as less trustworthy than local government. Food and drink multinational PepsiCo is the latest company to announce its plans to achieve net zero status. The business commits to reducing emissions across its value chain by 40% by 2030 on the way to net zero by 2040. The plans are, PepsiCo says, aligned with the Paris Accord. The company will reduce emissions from direct operations by 75% with a 2015 baseline. Energy at directly managed facilities in 13 countries already comes from 100% renewable sources, and the aim is for this to be in every country by 2030. As for many big businesses, a large proportion of the company's emissions lie in its Scope 3 indirect sources in supply chains. To make the 40% cut by 2030, PepsiCo says it will work with suppliers to, for example, roll out all-electric fleets, make factories and facilities more efficient on a transition to net zero, and by working hard on packaging design. In its agricultural supply chains, PepsiCo will encourage use of low-emission fertilisers and regenerative agricultural practices, among other measures. Finally this week, climate watchers have of course been cheered with new US President Joe Biden's long-trailed returning of the United States to the Paris Climate Accord in his first hours in office. The previous president had of course withdrawn the US from the international agreement. There were a number of other clear indications of a change in direction on climate change from the new Biden administration, including cancelling of the Keystone XL oil pipeline and even the reintroduction of the term climate change onto the White House website. All mentions of the term had been scrubbed out in 2017. In his inauguration speech, Mr. Biden talked of the need to urgently respond to a climate in crisis. Bravo. Innovation Forum's Future of Food US event will be held online over the 23rd to 25th of March on Central North America time. Already confirmed as panellists are leading practitioners from Danone, Kellogg, Oatly, Impossible Foods, PepsiCo, Bunge and Yum Brands. Registration for tickets is open, and you can save $150 on tickets if you register by the 22nd of January. This year's Sustainable Apparel and Textiles Conference will be from the 27th to 29th of April, And if you want to join the 200 plus participants and hear from more than 60 expert speakers, then you can sign up by the 22nd of January and save £150 on event passes. Our new Climate Innovation Forum will be on the 25th to 27th of May. You can hear from experts at Schneider Electric, Novozymes, Reckitt Benckiser, Walgreens Boots Alliance, and many more. And the Future of Food Europe event will be held from the 15th to 17th of June. Full details on innovationforum.co.uk. And register now to save £200 on conference passes. Do also check out the report from Innovation Forum's Innovation Accelerator Group, focusing on building resilient smallholder supply chains. Download from the Innovation Forum website, where you can also find information about the new Sustainable Fashion Barometer. If either of these research initiatives are of interest, do get in touch. Just before Christmas, I was joined by Ying Zhen Ho, Project Manager, ProForest Southeast Asia, Rashid Reza bin Anwaruddin, Head Group Sustainability at Sime Darby Plantation, and Olivier Tichet, Director for Sustainable Supply Chains at Muslim Mass, for a discussion about how the Accountability Framework Initiative is helping the palm oil sector in Southeast Asia. Ying Zhen, let me turn to you first. Can you just introduce for us the work of the Accountability Framework in Southeast Asia?
So the AFI Southeast Asia Coalition is represented by 11 institutions, and they are WWF Indonesia, WWF Malaysia, WWF Singapore, TNC Indonesia, Rainforest Alliance Indonesia, ProForest Indonesia, ProForest Malaysia, DRI Indonesia, CDP, NAPCON Solutions, and LPKL. The coalition is facilitated and coordinated by the AFI Southeast Asia Secretariat. The coalition has a crucial part to play in applying the accountability framework for mainstreaming supply chains in the Southeast Asia. We had a series of discussions earlier this year, and together we managed to identify the challenges and come up with a strategy to promote the uptake of accountability framework in the region.
Okay, well, let's think a little bit about palm oil in particular, a very important commodity in Southeast Asia. What are the key challenges in the palm oil sector in Southeast Asia right now?
Well, we know that there are actually multiple actions being taken to implement the NDP commitments, which stands for no deforestation, no peat, and no exploitation in the palm sector. However, we do notice that there is an inconsistency in the scope and the quality of the different NDP policies and commitments around. This inconsistency can be observed in terms of the scope of the policy, the use of definitions, the presence of measurable and time-bound commitments, the treatment of non-compliant suppliers, and the grievance procedures that are in place. Sometimes we also notice that the scope of the policies might be limited to a company's own subsidiaries only, and it's not applicable to their direct and indirect suppliers. This sort of create opportunities for markets that enable unsustainable practices in production, trade, and consumption of the commodities. And the inconsistency in the messaging that's being sent across the supply chain can also cause difficulties for midstream actors to manage and monitor far-reaching supply chains, which then lead to an implementation gap. So that would be the main challenge that we have identified in the Southeast Asia region.
How does the coalition, the AFI coalition then, plan to address these challenges?
In order to address the inconsistency surrounding NDP commitments, the AFI Southeast Asia Coalition has come up with an uptake strategy. Other than looking at enhancing the capacity and cohesiveness of the coalition, we are also actively engaging with priority stakeholders like manufacturers, palm oil companies with NDP commitments, and of course, those who do not have NDP commitments as well, to promote the adoption of accountability framework. Some of the activities for this component include performing the initial diagnostic and gap assessment, providing recommendations on the necessary improvement to be made on supply engagement and sourcing requirements, and active engagement with upstream suppliers. Other than that, we also understand the need to coordinate and ensure alignment of key peer initiatives with the accountability framework. And here, the coalition has identified the opportunities to link the accountability framework to key regional processes and initiatives. And we are also looking at linking the framework to the existing landscape and jurisdictional efforts. And last but not least, the coalition also recognizes the needs for continuous communication and engagement with key stakeholders such as the government stakeholders, regional or domestic companies, and local NGOs through activities such as workshops and trainings, production of technical materials to support engagement, and production of communication pieces to convey advice value propositions to regional stakeholders.
Thank you very much indeed. Pak Rashid, turning to you, could you just very briefly introduce us to Sain Darby, give us a bit of context on the business, and then explain why you've engaged with the Accountability Framework Initiative?
So Sain Darby Plantation, we are an integrated palm oil company operating across the entire value chain. We have upstream operations across Malaysia, Indonesia, Papua New Guinea and Solomon Islands with a land bank of over 600,000 hectares. And we also operate in the downstream segment as well with manufacturing facilities in a few countries as well. We are also the largest producer of certified sustainable palm oil globally. As a founding member of the Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil, RSPO, we are currently 100% certified to the RSPO itself, the particular standard. So where does AFI, the accountability framework, come in? So if you look at our commitments around responsible business and our NDPE commitments are essentially articulated in two charters. Our Responsible Agriculture Charter, which was launched in 2016, and our Human Rights Charter, which was published in 2017. So based on our understanding that the objective of the accountability framework is to essentially get alignment around definitions, around commitments, and how progress is being measured and reported. Back in 2019, we were actually in the midst of our review cycle of our commitments and our charters itself. Based on our understanding that AFI, the accountability framework, was actually developed with a wide range of stakeholders' input with an objective of, you know, alignment, we saw that as an opportunity to further strengthen our commitments to ensure that there's alignment with expectations of stakeholders. What we did with the accountability framework was we worked with the AFI to be part of our review process, to review our charters, to essentially look at four of the principles of the framework itself, namely around protection of forests and ecosystems, around the respect of human rights, around the area of supply chain and traceability, and also around how commitments are being specified as well. So in general, the latest versions of our charters, which have already been endorsed and approved by our main board, are in general mostly aligned with the principles around the four areas that we were working. And what we hope is basically it enables us to have better alignment with the expectations of our stakeholders around the commitments that we are made, and also around articulating and demonstrating the progress that we are making and where we are heading as well.
Can you give us an example of a specific commitment then that you've strengthened, what it looks like now?
Well, if you look at the deforestation side of things, previously, there was not a lot of alignment around, you know, the expectations around the sort of methodologies around no deforestation in our operations and around our supply chain as well. And now it's actually quite clear that, you know, when it comes to no deforestation in our operations and in our supply chain, we adopt the high carbon stock approach methodology prior to any new development that we need to do. And on top of the HCV sort of assessments that needs to be done, and also, you know, FPIC requirements around community rights. And these are the sort of commitments which are also included in our engagements with the suppliers and expectations of suppliers in ensuring no deforestation in our supply chain.
So the AFI just helped to align all the different issues together and they kind of take forward the best approach?
Yes.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Olivier, turning to you, from Muzumbas then, how has working with AFI benefited your business? I know you've used it to help with your supplier engagement in particular.
Yes, thanks. So just to set the scene a bit, Musimas, so we're an integrated palm company. We are mostly in Indonesia, basically an Indonesian company. We go from plantation to soap and cooking oil, and we are mostly a large refiner. The AFI, it has helped us in a few ways. First, even though it's quite new, if you go beyond the core principles, the AFI, it's a sum. It's really a sum of definitions, of guidances, which are very well crafted and not just focused at palm, but a bit more broad, and which are not a standard. And that has helped us a lot relook at our definitions, relook at our tools. It has also helped us with a revision of our sustainability policy recently. What's important with the AFI is, I think we're all agreeing there, it's the fact that we can all align within the sector. Because it's not a standard, the AFI, it's also for everybody. For me, the AFI, it's a common language, if you want. And having a common language, it's a very good first step to help building trust, which is something we must have more and more in our sector. So on supplier engagement, Rachid already has touched a couple of the points. How does it help us? Well, it helps us because it helps us look back at the tools we've developed over time and try to benchmark them against what the AFI is bringing to us. The AFI, as we said, is not telling you exactly how to do things. It's a lot helping you figure out what do you actually want to achieve. What, if you look at the core principles of the AFI, it's what tools do you have? Can you look back at what you're doing? Are you actually going in the right direction or not? It sounds simple like that, but it's actually quite complicated for us. And the core principles are quite broad, and they help us a lot trying to review what we've been doing over the years. So core principle 6, for example, which is about managing the supply chain compliance, there are a few elements in it which for us were also reassuring. For example, on how do you deal with non-compliant suppliers? One thing we found very reassuring there is that AFI says very clearly that it's about getting to a solution. It's not about suspending, or it's more about how do you maintain a relationship? How do you make it so that maintaining a relationship is actually building towards a solution, is actually improving what you're doing in the supply chain? We're also using the AFI now, and we're working with the AFI to look back at our tools and say, are tools good enough? Have we, because they've been developed incrementally over time, have they kept the right direction? Are they leaving some blank spots, or are they gathering information, or are they focusing on things which maybe are not actually critical? How can we reorganize everything using that sum of guidance and of definitions? But the definitions in particular are extremely important. As I said, they are the building blocks for a common language between the various actors in the supply chain. For us, they help us rephrase or reframe some of the requirements we have for our suppliers. And that's extremely helpful because we can be more efficient. We can see a bit further on how we can actually achieve. Yeah, we found the AFI very useful there because it's not a standard.
You've talked a lot there about the common language and the importance of common language. What were the challenges that were coming from the fact that there wasn't this common language in the past?
If you don't have a common language, you might use the same word and mean completely different things. And also you might think you're saying something, but actually you're meaning something different. I'll take an example. Recently, I was discussing with somebody about extension. And for me, extension services is actually how you give good management practices, good agricultural practices to smallholders. And the person with whom I was discussing understood it as extending the area planted. It might sound petty, but you see the gap between those two points. So the AFI helps us because if we say we are referring to the AFI definitions, then we all know we can refer to that and we have the same understanding of things, and they are quite well crafted. So it's quite nice to say we can refer to the AFI definition. If not, we can say we are not going to use the AFI definition, or we modify the AFI definition, or we use the AFI definition, but we're going a bit further, or we're going in a slightly different manner, or we're adapting it to our particular situation. But having that common language, that common base, those common building blocks, very useful and not within a standard. And that's the thing. It's not reserved for a small portion of the market. We can use it broadly.
So turning back to you, Yingjin, can you give us a bit of information about the no deforestation, no peat, no exploitation implementation reporting framework?
So the NDP implementation reporting framework, also known as the IRF, is developed as a tool to enable companies to understand the progress with the implementation of their NDP policy commitments across the entire production base that is connected to their supply base. It looks at the actions taken in both their own operations and also their third-party supply base. The IRF is also being used to identify implementation gaps, to monitor and report on progress, and to eventually drive improvement. And as mentioned previously, we know that there are different actions and approaches taken to implement the NDP commitments in the palm oil sector at the moment. For example, we have multiple certification schemes related to palm oil. There are a few landscape initiatives that are ongoing. Companies are implementing smallholder support programs, conducting mill engagement and assessment, carrying out producer group engagement, practicing concession maps and deforestation monitoring, and many other actions. So These actions are being captured in the IRF in the form of an allocation criteria that is presented as a list of questions in a functional template. And based on the answers given, the information will then be used to assign the mill within a company's supply base to 5 different categories, which are known, awareness, commitments and starting action, progressing and delivery. The allocation criteria on no deforestation and no peat can be found on the IRF website, and the draft allocation criteria on social issues looking at land rights and labor rights can also be found on the IRF website at ndpe-irf.net.
Thank you. So how then does the implementation reporting framework link with the Accountability Framework Initiative?
The scope of the IRF, which covers deforestation, ecosystem conversions, land rights, and workers' rights, is aligned with core principles 1-3 in the accountability framework. These specific activities captured in the IRF allocation criteria are also aligned with the implementation processes and activities that are laid out in core principles 4-11 and also the relevant operational guidance of the accountability framework. Some examples of the activities include supply chain risk assessment and traceability, supply engagement, land management, remediation, and also monitoring. It is also aligned with AFI's guidance on effective reporting. So to sum up, the IRF is aligned with the accountability framework when it comes to assessing companies' exposure to environmental and social risks, capturing management systems and activities related to the implementation of commitments, understanding the degree of traceability in the company's supply chain, and also providing an overview of the performance relative to the company's commitments and targets.
Thank you. Finally then, you have your palm oil collaboration group. What can you tell us about that?
The palm oil collaboration group, the POCG, which grew out of the initial planning around the IRF, after recognizing that there are topics which will benefit from individual groups for further discussion and alignment, the POCG provides a platform for companies to work together to collaboratively accelerate progress through development of practical solutions on specific topics. And there are currently more than 30 companies from all stages of the palm oil supply chain participating in the POCG, and it is convened by PepsiCo and Cargill, with many other companies convening the different working groups under POCG. And there are currently 4 working groups in the POCG, which are the IRF Active Working Group, the Social Issues Working Group, with a focus on addressing human rights issues on the ground, and the Production and Protection Beyond Concession, PPBC Working Group, with a focus on addressing smallholders' production and forest production beyond concessions, and also the Independent Verification Working Group, looking at developing the most effective approach to independent verification across the different issues. The work is ongoing and more information can be found on the POCG official website at palmoilcollaborationgroup.net. And no doubt the core principle and operational guidance of the accountability framework provides a comprehensive guidance, and like what Olivia mentioned just now, and as well, that enables us to have a solid basis, a common understanding on the definitions to be used when we are talking about certain issues, and to keep the discussion going to drive continuous progress on the ground.
So what we've talked about how the EFI is an example of a tool that can help strengthen commitments in businesses, is able to help with implementation of policies, and then also deal with reporting, the reporting side of things as well. I'd like to, in closing, talk a bit about what progress everyone expects to see in the next few years and the characteristics of the collaborations that will help. Yingzhen, why don't you go first?
So from the POCG perspectives, we expect to see progress in terms of transparency and information sharing between companies to make the engagement process with mills and refineries effective and impactful, which will then lead to improvements on the ground. And the recent POCG workshop discussions also showed a strong support for a wider engagement and synergized actions rather than exclusion or partial participation when it comes to driving NDP progress and ethical supply chain practices. And here, the accountability framework that provides a general reference for setting, implementing, monitoring, and reporting on ethical supply chain commitments is especially useful in the increasing collaborative nature of the palm sector. And now that the commonly used definitions and best practices are available, we hope that it will lead to effective engagement.
Pak Rishi, turning to you then, same question. What's the progress that you expect to see in the next few years and the characteristics of the collaboration processes that will help?
I guess probably just echoing what you mentioned. No, moving forward, our focus is essentially to ensure better consistency of the implementation of our commitments on the ground and also, you know, within our supply chain as well. You know, it's good to have these commitments made, but, you know, we need to make sure that action is actually happening on the ground and especially in, you know, in the suppliers in our supply chain. Because this is very challenging due to the size of our operations and also the sort of large reach of our supply chain. So we've piloted engagements with our suppliers in Malaysia around the accountability framework back in end of 2019, if not mistaken. And now we are looking at how to sort of extend this further so that, you know, our suppliers understand, you know, the sort of building blocks of what commitments around responsible business is. We like to see more companies aligned in the commitments and to use a common language when it comes to reporting on progress. Because we hope that the accountability framework itself, with it, you know, we are better aligned with what our stakeholders are expecting. It's also important to ensure that, you know, our stakeholders and also the sort of work that needs to be done so that, you know, everybody is on the same page.
Thank you. And Olivier, same question to you then. What is the progress that you expect to see in the next few years? And how do you characterize the collaboration and other initiatives and other tools that will help?
We agree we have a common language or building blocks. We have tool for better transparency, so using the NDP IRF, which is still not fully developed, but we're getting there. So what we hope to see now is to see better trust with our customers. And having that trust with our customers then will help us getting everybody upstream to align and to implement, indeed, the commitments we've all made. I think all the large refiners, or at least the responsible large refiners, to get that implemented on the ground. It can only happen if we have the trust from the consumers. Without their trust, the producers, they feel it as well, and it doesn't connect. So we have now a common language. We have the tool to report and to share and to show with a lot of transparency how our supply chains are performing, and to show progress over the years. That will help us to bring even more compliance or even more commitment upstream. We use that. The NDP IRF is a very visual tool. It's very nice. It helps a lot to align our suppliers and say, well, you're in this category now. You can move. And how do you demonstrate what you're doing? It might not be to change their practices, but how do we find, how do we explain what you are doing? How do you show us what you are doing? How do you show it in a way that can be then shared with the consumers, our customers, and the consumers?
Well, it does sound that, as Olivier said there, the fact that you developed trust, developed a common language, and developing the tools to show progress, it'll be interesting to see how the palm oil sector goes forward over the coming year and years, and be fascinating to follow the progress. But it's been a great discussion, and my thanks to all of our panelists today. But for now, thanks very much indeed.
And as ever, look out at innovationforum.co.uk for all the usual audio, interviews and insights. And don't forget to register now for the Future of Food US and Sustainable Apparel and Textiles events to save £150 on passes. But that's all for now. I've been Ian Welsh, and I'll be back next week.